This is Trisha Eaton at RR Auction, and welcome back to part 3 of our podcast with in-person autograph expert John Brennan. So how do you decide what you're going to let go, what you're going to let other collectors share in, because you do still collect. How do you decide what to let go of?
Well, I don't have a therapist, so I have to battle with myself. It's like being in the room. It's like the guy that handles the bees, and you open the top of the thing real quick and hope that none get out, you know? It's a challenge back and forth. But just to be reasonable, I've been having the stuff so long, it becomes difficult to maintain everything. And I've found myself looking at stuff in the last few years, and I'm playing the albums again and go, I don't like this one as much as I liked it then. Or, oh my God, I like it more. You know, your tastes change. So some things I wasn't so into then, I'm more into now, and so forth and so on. But, you know, that's how I'm trying to do it. I'm just mostly doing it musically. I mean, you know, sometimes there's stuff that doesn't look perfect, or it is perfect, but I'm just not so interested in keeping it. It's random.
So to talk a little bit about the auction we have coming up in May, one of the most impressive parts of it is we have 100 signed guitars. Can you talk a little bit about what it was like to get guitar signed and the kind of the challenges there?
The guitar thing was such a love-hate thing. Like I said earlier, I didn't really grasp onto it in the beginning. I was just so into the music. I mean, to me, and everybody has different tastes, I've spoken to people that want the most expensive guitar on earth signed. They want it signed. And then there's other people that, well, why would you get that signed? It's ruining it. So anyway, for me, it was so love and hate. And for the artists, it was the same thing. In the early days, they kind of liked signing them a lot. But then later on, it became a huge thing about money to them. So they didn't so much want to sign them. And I think it's really taboo nowadays for them to sign guitars and stuff. So I think it's a great investment to have them signed.
So your solution to kind of their hesitation to signing guitar bodies was to what?
Well, their hesitation and also my hesitation to have back pain is I would carry around, you know, pick guards to get signed because they were easier to carry around. And sometimes you would run into someone and you didn't know you would see them. If you had a pick guard, you could get that signed.
Do you have a good story about running into someone by accident?
Think that a lot of guys nowadays would rather sign a guitar than a pick guard. They really don't like signing pick guards. So to have pick guards signed is a great thing if you're a collector. Great story about getting a guitar signed?
Well, just running into someone that you didn't expect and you happen to have a pick guard, I guess, in your, not in your pocket, but you had it on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you do have some interesting things in there. I mean, you have a lot of contemporary artists that we haven't offered for you before. Like you have Amy Winehouse, Lady Gaga. So I had a question on that. Like, why would you get them to sign a pick guard? But that kind of answered the question. You had it on you?
Yeah. Well, at the point of Amy Winehouse, which is predating Gaga by what? 5 years or so. Amy Winehouse, it was, you know, a point of reference that, you know, albums were still hard to find. They were back out a bit more. I remember buying her album from England, and then I was still able to get a few US ones. And she likes signing. So to get Pickguard signed was just an addition to what I was doing. And she would only just write Amy with an X. Sometimes she'd personalize it or something, but it was just an addition to what I was doing. Mm-hmm.
It's actually interesting you mentioned the X, because I've had customers call and they'll say, you know, I'm wondering if it was XO, or, I mean, what's the whole thing with the Winehouse? And I mean, you're saying she's approachable, so that's good. I mean, what was she like?
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of reference point for the detectives to work on here. I saw her once, right? Twice in a couple of days. I mean, when I went for her, I went for her for a few days, but that was it. After that, when she went back to England, and that was it for me. I never saw her again. So that window was not as small as Prince's window, but it was open and closed quick. I remember she was here quietly. Someone called me and I ran in. I mean, I basically ran out of the house with no shoes on. It was crazy. I think the first time I got a photo, this guy took it from halfway down the street, and I ran up to her on like West Broadway in Soho. And that's when I first had her sign. And, you know, I was real excited because, you know, she was another one of those true artists. I heard it and I'm, you know, here's my new drug. You know, that was, to me, it was, everyone has their drug. Music was my drug. And that was the drug when I heard that. So right away, same thing as most of the others. You hear it, you buy it, you listen more. And with her, you know, she was with her husband at the time. Things were still somewhat okay, 07, and before things really started to spiral, and she was here. And that was a point where, politically speaking, you couldn't have a lot of mistakes or you couldn't come to America. So as soon as I heard she was coming, and knowing what she was like, I didn't know she was coming. I heard she was here, and I went. And another person I wanted to meet at the same time was Pete Doherty, because I was a Libertines fan, and I never got a chance to get him here, because, you know, I think he actually got here and they sent him back, but because you couldn't come here if you had issues. So that was a small window, and that's the way it went with her.
Do you ever feel lucky that you get to meet some of these artists that were kind of like gone too soon, like Amy Winehouse? Can you think of anybody else like that?
Maybe Tom Petty. I don't know. Yeah. There's so many. Aretha Franklin. I mean, I look through your collection and there's a lot of people now that are getting of that age and the rock and roll.
Well, it's era. So weird. It's strange. I mean, Cobain, I remember I mean, I was really on fire at that point. You know, there was nothing else going on. Rock and roll was it. So when Nirvana came, that was what I did every day. And then I was sitting in a parking lot at my gym when I heard it on the radio. Like, that's, you know, certain things in the world happen. You remember when, where, and what.
Smells so like I'm Teen Spirit you're so talking I'm, about?
No, when he died. Yeah. Yeah, when you're saying we passed on.
Yeah.
So I had no pre-thoughts with him. But with Layne Staley, Alice in Chains, we used to talk about it all the time because he had the reputation. So we would talk about it. You know, it was sad, but we're like, you know, it's like kind of like the whole Keith Richards thing, right? So, and then sure, Keith Richards is going to live longer than everybody, right? So it's all just a myth, right?
It's so true.
But so Cobain was a shock. Layne Staley wasn't. Chris Cornell was a shock. Who would have ever thought? Such a friendly guy, so nice, blah, blah, blah. You know, great band, never thought. Winehouse, yeah, you know, that was a thought, of course.
Right.
Because it was just so public, everything that went wrong. Other artists, it's hard to say, you could throw them at me. Like George Michael, I was a fan, great voice. You think about things that happen, you start coming up with your own theories, right? I don't know who else went young, but.
To go back to, you said Chris Cornell, you have this great photo of you like sitting on steps with the whole band. You remember that one?
Yep. That was on Bond Street. Louder than Love. It was like 89 or 90. I remember that day. That was the same day that I got a phone call that Ronald Reagan was in town. So I remember going for Soundgarden by myself. No one else on earth cares. but I'm a fan. I'm listening to the album again, blowing my ears out. That's a powerful album. And then at the same day, you know, I'm running up uptown. I remember to go and try and get a photo with Ronald Reagan,
who was an actor, the president, which no one thought would happen. And that was something I want to touch on super quick was, if we can, is all the celebrities, because, I mean, you got Al Pacino. We haven't really touched on that, you know, like in the podcast. Yeah. I'd like to hear, you know, a little bit about celebrities. What got you into that sort of? And
access.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 23 and a half hours a day on music and 15 minutes on anything else. I mean, I have some movies I like. I like movies. I'm older now. I can watch more stuff when I'm home.
Yeah.
But I didn't obsess over, like, Stanley Kubrick. What do they mean in this scene or that? Or,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I was into the rock and roll stuff. I mean, when I was young, it was, you know, like midnight movies with Pink Floyd. It was always rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't obsessing over this or that. But I mean, to me, Fonda, Nicholson, those guys were like total rock and roll, you know, in the movies. And you know, I like Scarface and Raging Bull and some of the obvious stuff. So, I wouldn't call myself like a cinema.
So you were there at the hotel, and so they would be there. Is that sort of the connection? You'd be waiting 18 hours for a Mick Jagger, and maybe you'd get a celebrity too.
Yeah.
Or you're, you know, Chris Cornell, and you're getting Ronald Reagan.
I remember I was waiting once at a hotel up on the Upper East Side. I was maybe waiting for a Beatle or a Stone. I can't remember. And I remember Harrison Ford gets out of a car in front of me, and I'm like, and there was other people there who recognized him immediately, because I mean, obviously Star Wars, and I just didn't even know it was him. So, you know,
Han Solo.
I don't mind telling the truth here, you know, that it just, you know,
how did you have a Harrison Ford photo with you?
I didn't.
So what'd you do?
He walked right by me.
Oh, I think because you didn't know who it was.
Yeah, but, I mean, later on, at later dates, in the future after that, yeah, of course.
Okay.
But like if you were waiting for someone else,
we're talking
30
some odd years here, you know. You know, I didn't always have to use my feet to drive the car. Eventually, I learned how to. All right.
So what I was saying was, if you are waiting for someone and then someone else totally different happened to be there, how did you just have the item on hand to sign?
Well, that's where the index cards came in.
Uh-huh.
In the beginning. But later on, when the hobby completely destroyed all common sense, the trunk was full. There was no beach chairs, no going to the beach or going to the barbecue. The trunk was full with file cabinets full of photos and boxes full of albums.
Were they organized at all?
Yeah.
Alphabetical, probably.
Right. Oh, shit. There he is. Boom. You know. You know, it was.
You learned.
Yeah, because, you know, couple times I saw some heroes without knowing it, you know, and
you don't want to be the zero. You want to be the hero with them.
Yeah.
Was there any good celebrity story, like a Schwarzenegger story? Any, I'm trying to think of cool celebrities that might be fun to be around for a hot second.
Well, Al Pacino was always cool. He was almost always affable and friendly. Johnny Depp was great. Always so friendly, just totally cool. Totally.
Really?
About, yeah, you know, he was hip to it. I mean, like, he was on. If he wasn't on, you probably wouldn't see him, because he was on, you know. Tom Cruise.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, Tom Cruise, nice guy. Nicholson was, you know, just random. I mean, we saw him during the day, you know. I saw Nicholson. He was Nicholson, you know.
Were there certain places that these people hung out at that you frequented?
Yeah, well, in the old days, each person had their spot. I mean, but back in the early days, there was places like the China Club, the Limelight. For restaurants, a lot of actors would go to a place called Elaine's. There's the nightclubs. The Palladium too.
And this is New York City.
Later on, there was the tunnel, huh?
New York City.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. In Manhattan, that was my home stadium.
So like in your lifetime of collecting, how much of it was in New York City and how much of it was in LA or?
Oh, 95%. It was in maybe 98%. I mean, I traveled a couple months in Chicago, like I said, with Guns N' Roses. I mean, LA, I did a few months. And then I made trips after that. I did London a few times. I went to London to collect. And then when I was there, I went to other cities.
When did you go to London?
87. I think I went 2 years in a row.
So was that
87, 88. Then I went in 98, I think, again.
For specific artists, I'm assuming.
Yeah. For a lot of times it was Bill Wyman. That was the key, you know. But when I was over there, I saw Keith Richards. I saw Eric Clapton over there. I saw a couple other random shots where I saw Robert Plant at an event. I saw George Harrison at his studio and the airport. But I mean, percentage wise, yeah, it was New York. And I mean, you know, I followed Van Halen around the country. I followed Guns N' Roses after that around the country, you know, so it would be random here and there. I've followed Paul McCartney around, followed the Stones a few times. Not so much the Stones because I did go to London for them, but I mean, it was more, they were in New York, so I didn't have to leave.
So, but when you left, it was for like an extended period of time where you could usually, yeah, like get a lot of stuff. And
yeah,
when
well,
you were
there. Yeah, I drove to California twice to collect, you know, meaning I took the car. Like I said, the trunk was full and I went and moved in for a month or two, three, and stayed and, you know, Grammys or Oscars. I remember.
Okay. That
late
makes
80s,
sense.
Early
the
90s.
Shows are out there.
So I was there a couple times back in those days for extended periods before my life changed.
I want to know about Lady Gaga a little bit, if, mm-hmm, you know, like if any, you have any, what do you think of Lady Gaga, by the way? I'm interested in hearing your opinion.
I was thinking about it the other day because I finally saw A Star Is Born. And I mean, I don't have a lot. I've met her a few times, but in today's scenario, I didn't meet her first. I wasn't there right away. Everybody else was, the whole world, the monsters, right? So I'm not significant, but I did like her enough and started listening. I don't like everything, but I like her more. I like her more because I don't like everything she does, which means she's totally risky. I love that. So, and then she's done some stuff like The Star Is Born I really like, and I've liked some of her dance music. And the fact that she's so, you know, daring, I love that. So that's, in today's world, that's great. So that really turned me on. And she's always been good to her fans when I was around. She's very, she's such a big star that she's probably had to do some evasion to stay away from it, especially nowadays, because it's a much, much higher level. I mean, to have these conversations and talk about me, you're talking about, you know, in the mid-80s, there's five of us, seven of us, eight of us. Some nights, if it was a big event, yeah, there's 100 people. But now there's 100 people all the time, everywhere, constantly. And not everybody wants autographs, but they all want pictures. They all want something, right? So when I see, like, Lady Gaga or Harry Styles, One Direction. I just recently heard about this BTS, where the fandom, they're a Korean.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've seen them
huge.
On TV.
They're huge. So
right.
I mean, the elevated excitement I heard is that they're calling it Beatlesque levels, which is hard to imagine because I mean, the Beatles at the Plaza. I mean, the crowd went almost all the way to Madison. Right. It was. So it's just a lot different now.
You have some pretty cool photos with Lady Gaga. One of them, she has like a black thing over her entire face.
Oh my God, I was so depressed. I mean, a lot of people think it's cool, I guess, if you know it's Lady Gaga, but I'm still a purist. I was like waiting there for a long time. And she came out and she had like this freaking thing on her head. I'm like, oh. So, you know, it's cool because we know it's her and you're going to write Lady Gaga under the picture. But at the time I was like mortified. I'm like, oh, so mad. So that's why I went back and I took another picture of her later where she looked completely different at another time.
So that time when she was dressed in the black, did you have her like on your own or was, and that was how you were able to get the autograph?
No, there was a few people there. She's rare. I mean, rarely have I ever seen her around where there wasn't some people there. Given the circumstances she goes through, she's very accommodating.
Yeah, because she's done
Beyond reasonably accommodating, given her status. And
I mean, she did a Super Bowl.
She does have huge. Extremely talented security. But at the same time, she puts herself out there, so she tests her team out. I admire her in a lot of ways.
Speaking of friendly celebrities, can you talk a little bit about Clapton, or as you like to call him, Eric? Because he's one of the people you've met the most, right?
I've had a lot of success with him from being a fan. I met him at a very early on. I met him when he was first touring with Roger Waters. I guess that was early 84. I was really, you know, I was like 19. And then being in New York, he was always in New York. So I would see him forever through the highs, then through those lows and through the returns and the ups and downs. And I was, I don't know how really, I didn't really think about it, how it happened, but I was able to pretty much always speak with him one way or another. And, you know, a lot of times he wouldn't sign, but he never made it out like I shouldn't come back. So, you know, it was pretty great relationship. So I would come and go. And eventually, you know, he just kind of felt at ease. And, you know, I just stand quarter mile away, and if he comes over, he comes over. And it felt, you know, good that had great success, great luck with him.
So it wasn't like he saw you from across the room and he was like, oh my god, not that guy again.
Well, he didn't say it. No. I remember during some hard times, one time he actually kind of like had a message. Because, like I said, nowadays a lot of people don't know the right way to approach and stuff. And I guess something happened, and one time he actually mentioned to me, you know, say this, or I guess he thought I was a spokesman, you know, or something, because he had seen me enough. So that's actually happened to me a few times. But with him, he actually, get the word out, you know. Okay.
John Brennan, spokesman for Autograph Community.
Anyway.
Well, you have some photos, great photos, with Metallica. And I saw them in the Garden 96, so 16, and I'd never experienced a crowd really like that in my life. I'd seen Radiohead. There's been some different kinds of crowds. And Metallica, the energy, can you speak a little bit about any stories about Metallica?
I first met them soon after Cliff died, and when Justice for All was coming out. May have been before it, when Jason was in the band, and they were in New York a lot, and as with Guns, maybe not as prolifically wild, but they were wild too. I mean, very cool and affable and into fans, and I collected them pretty strongly and always had good stuff, imports and picture discs and independent label, then later label when they were on the majors and stuff. So they were cool. And, you know, they things changed later on, but or in the early days, or late 80s, 87, 88, which isn't real early for them, but I was there at that point. You know, they were cool, and I saw them in concert. I remember I was in Wisconsin, which was when I was out chasing guns around. I went to Wisconsin, which was like 2 hours away, to see Metallica, and The Cult was opening that show. And I remember getting hit in the head by a huge clump of dirt and almost got knocked out. That's my big memory from that show, sorry, but, you know, I remember once telling them how the high-pitched production of that album nearly tore my hearing out on my right side, I think, because I was always in the car and the sound was mostly to my right. So, but that's how it was with Metallica.
Can you talk a little bit about Led Zeppelin? Because you have some pretty incredible photos with them all the way from when you were really young up until recent days. One of my favorite pieces, definitely favorite guitar we have coming up in May, is Sunburst Strat signed by Plant and Page. So talk about Led Zeppelin.
Well, I was just, they almost, I mean, I was so obsessed with them. I mean, because they were so mythological, so powerful, so beyond, so untouchable. To me, Jimmy Page was everything. I mean, and they were like, I don't know, I guess untouchable is the word. So when I finally met, you know, Jimmy, I was, you know, just so excited, and it never waned. It was always just some kind of mystery, you know, from the movie, from the way the project, the clothes, everything. It was just beyond. So I was obsessed. I was caught up in the whole thing. And then it was never enough times trying to meet them. And, you know, in many ways, in the early days, it was very sad because they were not together. You know, I'd see Robert around, or I'd see Jimmy around. I didn't see John Paul till 5 or 6, maybe 7 or 8 years after that, until the early 90s, I finally met him. But, it was one of the most important things for me was when I finally met Page. Well, I met him pretty early, but I just never really grasped meeting him. Every time I'd see him, it was like, you know, running a marathon and drinking water for hours and he's still thirsty. You know, because that was one of my earliest things, was Zeppelin and seeing that movie in the theater.
Mm-hmm. One final question, and then we'll wrap things up. But will you ever truly stop collecting?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, there's no one left to get. I mean,
no new artists, no.
Yeah, it's weird.
Awakening.
It's weird. I'm fighting myself. I guess I kind of stopped because I am trying to only listen. Like, there's some new groups, like we talked about, like TRST, this new artist, and there's some new artists, and I'm doing my best because it's kind of like I know what's going to happen if I start.
Grimes.
Well, I already met Grimes.
You did.
I got her to sign.
Right.
Yeah.
But there's some cool artists.
There's great, great independent music out there for people. Anytime they say there isn't, I'm not going to argue with them, but I'm just going to suggest that if you look, you shall find. There's more music now than ever because they have ways to make it on their own. They don't have to answer yes or no. And then it's just up to, you know, fans to find it. That's the harder thing, but it's out there. And I'm, like you said, you've turned me on, I've turned you on. There's crazy stuff, and that's the main inspiration. So I am still kind of collecting, but doing my best to, you know, keep it under control.
Keep it under control. Okay. Our auction is a trusted source for rare autographs and historic artifacts. Since 1976, RR has grown into a globally recognized auction house headquartered in Boston. We pride ourselves on offering rare and remarkable items and superlative customer service. You can find us online at rrauction.com. And John's May auction will be online from May 9th and ending the 16th, 2019. If you enjoyed our podcast, please take the time to leave us a review and follow us on iTunes for more rare and remarkable stories from industry insiders and experts like John.